There was writing on every single window and every single side of both of the cars.
Acts of vandalism in Anchorage target immigrants. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, March 30th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, marijuana concentrates get left in the legislation in the Senate.
There were 40 hearings across the state. There were 8 of them held just by the Lieutenant Governor alone on this particular subject.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. And by Raven Alaska, offering passenger, cargo, and same-day package delivery to over 100 communities across Alaska. Find more at flyraven.com.
An incident over the weekend in Anchorage has alarmed members of an immigrant community, but officials are stopping short of calling it a hate crime. On Sunday morning, a vehicle outside a multifamily home was found with deflated tires and hateful messages written in washable orange marker. Debbie Bach is a friend of the 5 men who lived together in the building, all of whom are refugees hailing from the Darfur region of Sudan. Bach says she went there Sunday and was shocked by what she saw.
There was writing on every single window and every single side of both of the cars, things that said like, not welcome, go home, take a hike, leave Alaska, go away.
The men called the Anchorage Police Department to file a report, but Bach says she and others are surprised to learn the department is treating the incident as a vandalism case.
So I called the police again, and I talked to a dispatcher, and the dispatcher told me that they had taken a report over the phone, but no one was going to come out and see the men, and no one was going to take pictures.
Bach says members of the community in Spinard, where the incident took place, have made efforts in the last day to show support with men living at the residence that were targeted, but that they still feel unsafe after what happened, and some are wondering if the assault on property constitutes a hate crime. No comment was available from the Public Affairs Office at the Anchorage Police Department, which is closed in observation of Seward's Day. However, Stacey Fager-Pelessier with the Federal Bureau of Investigation in Anchorage says they haven't seen any evidence that would involve them in the case. When Alaskans voted to regulate marijuana, a discrepancy was created where possession of small amounts of the drug was legal and where possession of larger amounts meant higher-level felonies. The Alaska Senate has passed a bill to bridge the gap, and in the process, they rejected a controversial effort to preemptively ban marijuana concentrates. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reports.
Senator Pete Kelly, a Fairbanks Republican, presented his amendment using images of marijuana candies and buildings consumed in fiery infernos.
What drug is smoked in a glass apparatus using a propane torch to heat metal elements so the drug can be instantly vaporized, allowing large quantities to be inhaled in a single hit? What drug is highly manufactured using volatile flammables and occasionally explodes in neighborhood labs?
Kelly likened the making of marijuana concentrates like butane hash oil to the manufacture of meth and said that children would die if his amendment did not pass. While Kelly would have liked to ban concentrates immediately, his measure was written to go into effect in 2 years, which is the earliest that legislators can fundamentally alter a ballot initiative according to the state constitution. Kelly argued that people were voting for legalization of the leafy stuff, not the sale of pot brownies, candies, and other forms of concentrates.
If people knew what concentrates were, they would never, ever, ever vote for them in this state. I'm convinced of that.
Many members of the Senate disagreed. Senator Liesl McGuire, an Anchorage Republican, pointed out that with 53% of the vote, the marijuana initiative was more successful than any single candidate for statewide office. She argued that the debate over whether concentrates should be allowed was a key issue of the campaign.
What I believe is that the people, in the plain language that was presented to them, saw a definition that included the word concentrate, saw a definition that included the word compound. There were 40 hearings across the state.
There were 8 of them held just by the lieutenant governor alone on this particular subject. And in almost every one of those hearings, it devolved into a debate over concentrates.
Kelly's amendment ultimately failed 14-6. The vote was an unusual one, with many Republicans voting against their colleague's proposal. An amendment that would have delisted marijuana as a controlled substance also received considerable debate before ultimately failing. The marijuana crime bill, when considered in full, passed 17-3, with a block of Anchorage Democrats opposing it over the controlled substance language. It will now be considered by the House. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
In Haines, the Borough Assembly has decided to wait until the state finalizes legislation before taking any action on local rules on marijuana use and sales. But some residents aren't waiting on the legislature. KHNS's Emily Files talked to a marijuana grower in Haines who wants to set up a cannabis exchange.
Oh, that's okay. You can go ahead and answer it if you want.
That's okay. Dean Laurie's phone has been ringing constantly since he posted an ad on the Haines community website titled Cannabis Exchange. In it, he says, with Measure 2, we now have a great and legal way to exchange marijuana strains. He proposes getting local pot growers together to try out each other's product.
5, 6, 7, whoa. 8.
When I talked to Laurie last Friday, it had been about 24 hours since he posted the ad. More than 20 people had called him about it. Laurie sees the cannabis exchange as a way to get pot growers and smokers together to share their experiences.
I just saw this as a way to get, you know, just break the ice and say, hey, people, we don't have to hide indoors. We don't have to look when the cops drive by. We don't have to spray air freshener when they show up at the door.
Laurie, who goes by the nickname Bear, grows 6 plants in his own home. You can tell when you walk in the door. The smell of marijuana permeates the place. Laurie's son is in the kitchen, trimming one of the plants. Laurie shows me into the small, brightly lit room where he grows a strain of pot called Quirkle.
I average about maybe 3/4 of an ounce or an ounce of actual usable pot.
Laurie says he smokes pot for medicinal reasons. He estimates he smokes about 1 ounce of it a week. He also uses it in smoothies. With 6 plants, Laurie says he's only able to provide pot for himself and one other medical marijuana user. He thinks a cannabis exchange could help inform people who have negative views of marijuana.
And I want people that don't smoke, people that don't get high, that are scared, come and see with your own 2 eyes. You could take a drink, take a bite, or take a hit. You're not going to die from it, but then you could speak from an experience.
Laurie says there wouldn't be any money involved with the exchange.
If you bring a couple of nugs, I'm going to give you a couple of nugs.
Okay.
We're just trading pot. We're just exchanging pot. There's no money to be exchanged.
What about people who don't have pot?
I'll give them a nug. Come by. I'll give you a nug. You know, I have no problem sharing a joint with you.
Laurie says he's consulted a lawyer to make sure this kind of exchange is legal. Juneau District Attorney James Scott said in an email that he can't answer whether the exchange would be legal until the close of the legislative session. Haines Police Chief Bill Musser didn't comment on the legality of it, but referred KHNS to the state statute.
But I'm not waiting for the legislature, I can assure you of that, because what I want to do has nothing to do with retail sales. It has nothing to do with wholesale growing. That's all going to be left up to other people. My whole thing is community oriented, nonprofit.
Laurie sees a cannabis exchange as a precursor to something bigger. He wants to start a community garden where people pay for plots to grow their own marijuana plants. Laurie calls Haines the pot smokingest town he knows. He says the approximately 63% of Haines voters that supported Measure 2 shows that.
That means that every single person in this community has somebody in their circle of people that they love that are smoking pot.
Laurie says in the week since he posted the cannabis exchange ad, the response has been unbelievable. He says he's heard from a number of people who are interested in learning more about growing their own marijuana plants. In Haines, I'm Emily Files.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Indigenous leaders adapt Western-style government while retaining traditional approaches.
They are trying to to take the best part of each world.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. Join Alaska Public Media and participate in our statewide live online social screening and chat about the film The Home Stretch, Friday, April 17th from 12 to 1 p.m. Be part of the conversation about homeless teens in our communities. More at alaskapublic.org.
A new report that says that as Arctic ship traffic has increased, so has the number of Arctic ship mishaps. The annual Shipping and Safety Review by Alliance Global counts 55 ship casualties in the waters of the Arctic Circle last year, up from 3 a decade ago. Machinery damage or failure accounts for about half of those, with wrecking or stranding in second place. Only one Arctic ship near northern Norway and Iceland was considered a total loss. As Arctic ice diminishes, some are predicting the Arctic will become an important area for global shipping. In 2013, with little summer ice, 71 ships navigated some or all of the Northern Sea route across Russia. Traffic slowed in 2014 with a rebound of ice. This winter, Arctic sea ice reached its peak February 25th. The extent of annual sea ice cover was the lowest since satellite records began. The Army Corps of Engineers are gearing up for the summer season of projects around the state. Chris Tu is the chief of contracting. He says the focus of their work has changed from building new facilities to remodeling existing military infrastructure, weatherization, and bringing aging structures up to code. Resource restrictions mean most of their projects this year will be military rather than in remote coastal areas. But he says climate change has meant a lot of work for the Corps in the past decade, especially in northern and western Alaska.
It is a big deal for Alaska, and climate change is certainly impacting our program and the citizens who live out in these remote areas.
Two says one such project will be at Cape Lisburn on the northwest coast, where erosion is encroaching on an Air Force airfield and needs to be fixed. He says it will take about $20 million and expects the design and bid process to conclude this summer, with work starting in 2016. Arctic infrastructure is a big priority as the Corps continues studying the rapidly growing need for larger and deeper port facilities at Nome and possibly Port Clarence. Bruce Sexauer is the chief of civil works for the Corps. He says as oil, gas, and other resource extraction ramps up, bigger port facilities are necessary.
This isn't a place where they'll be shipping a large amount of oil or other resources out of. Rather, this port facility is there to provide support to those vessels, say if one gets in trouble or needing to send supplies out to the oil wells or whatnot. This is a very supportive activity. If something bad were to happen, be able to do search and rescue more efficiently from Nome than say down from either Dutch or from Kodiak.
Sexauer says Kodiak and Dutch Harbor will always be important facilities in the winter when the Arctic is impassable, and it will be years before the port expansion plan is approved and authorized by Congress for funding. But the increase in activity in the Arctic continues to build.
The vessels that are waiting off in Nome, they started with just a few vessels a year, up to dozens, then up to over 100, a couple of hundred vessels a year that would need to wait or anchor off of Nome to come in and use the facilities there.
Civil works projects need state and local investment, so Nome's port expansion and building any infrastructure at Port Clarence would need a mix of hard-to-come-by funds. But Corps Contract Chief Chris Tu says if the U.S. Navy moves forward with their stated goal of taking the military lead in the Arctic in the next 15 years, some of that infrastructure funding mix could come from DOD.
Yes, that would absolutely have to happen. And, you know, those are decisions that need to be made fairly quickly in order to get things teed up in order to do them within the next decade or so. But I do think it's possible. Whether we want it to happen or not, it is happening. And it's not only going to happen within the coastal waters of Alaska, but there are other nations that are going to work in the Arctic. And our ability to put infrastructure in place so this stuff is done as safely as possible seems to be in everyone's best interest.
Tu says other projects, such as ongoing toxins cleanup at former defense sites, will continue across the state this summer at Northeast Cape on St. Lawrence Island, the Susitna Gunnery Range in the Mat-Su Valley, and Umiut Test Well 9 on the North Slope. The city of Homer is taking its first step toward a long-planned expansion of the city's deep water dock. Earlier this month, the Homer City Council chose to award R&M Consultants of Anchorage the contract for a study to evaluate the project's merits. KBBI's Quentin Chandler spoke with Port Director and Harbor Master Brian Hawkins about the planned expansion.
Homer has had a vision for an expanded deep water dock for about 10 years now. Harbor Master Brian Hawkins says Senator Lisa Murkowski pushed for and won funding from Congress for the expansion feasibility study back in 2006, only to see those funds tied up in governmental red tape. It took several years' work, but the funding is now back on the table. The purpose of the study is to justify the cost of expanding the dock through either a remodel or replacing it completely.
Our goals are to be able to bring containerized freight service into Homer, and a benefit from that would be to help lower shipping costs to and from Homer. There's also the benefit of adding jobs.
Hawkins expects once the dock's service capacity grows, there will be an increase in work available for longshoremen, storage, and warehouse employees. And the overall regional benefits are also extremely attractive. He says a past report from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers concluded Alaska's transportation system is somewhat vulnerable to disruption because of a reliance on one major shipping hub and a lack of backup facilities.
The major hub being the Port of Anchorage, and the fact that 95% of all goods travel through the Port of Anchorage, and then the need to build up facilities in these sub-hubs.
Those sub-hubs include places like Homer, Seward, Valdez, and Whittier.
We need to develop these smaller ports so that we have a backup plan and so that there's a less expensive way for product to be moved.
Hawkins says this early in the process, there's no way to know yet how long new construction for the deepwater dock would take or how much it would cost.
What would a new facility look like? How big? How heavy? How many new customers are we going to be looking at?
The city expects the consultants to take at least a year to find those answers. One thing is clear, though. Hawkins says it will be impossible for the city to pay for the new dock on its own, so city officials may look for federal, state, and private dollars if the expansion is approved.
The far-reaching benefits from having a facility like this are going to have to justify the expense of building it.
Hawkins says it's hard to predict where this project will go, but in light of Port and Harbor's growth in recent years and possible future developments like the state's planned natural gas pipeline, he thinks it's a safe bet we'll see strong demand for dock expansion in the future. In Homer, I'm Quentin Chandler.
With a spike in shootings and homicides in Anchorage since the start of the year, legislators in Juneau heard testimony on Friday about why violent crime appears to be rising. As KSKA's Zechariah Hughes reports, a local problem may bring new state funding for solutions.
Anchorage Democrat Bill Wilikowski says senators from South Central Alaska want to know what's driving the 33 shootings and 10 homicides in Anchorage this year and convened an information session.
That was at least my purpose for being one of the people who requested the hearing, was to get some action items. What can we do? What's the problem? And is it something that we should be involved in?
The Judiciary Committee heard testimony on a range of issues, from drugs and gangs to staffing levels. Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan spoke to the committee by phone and says reducing the size of the police force during his tenure was a necessity given the financial situation his administration inherited.
We agree with virtually all the speakers about staffing levels. You guys right now are going through a big challenge regarding budget. Well, I went through that big challenge too when I came into office in 2009. And when you're facing multi-million dollar deficits, you have to take some steps to make sure that your budget is in balance while at the same time focusing on your priorities.
Sullivan pushed back against the perception that crime is on the rise. He cites statistics showing overall crime has been on a years-long decline in Anchorage. He also says the total number of crimes reported today is less than it was decades ago when Anchorage's population was significantly smaller. But Detective Jeff Bell offered a different view, telling legislators the focus on uniform crime reporting, or UCR statistics, says more about the city's approach to policing than it does about crime taking place. Bell says the type of proactive policing conducted by the city's gang and theft units years ago worked well, but doesn't necessarily look good on paper.
You're not going to see those numbers in the UCR because we don't report what we don't know. We don't know how many crimes were prevented by us being proactive. There's just no way of measuring that, so it doesn't get measured and you can't put that out.
Bell is vice president of the Anchorage Police Department Employees Association, the officers' union that's been critical of Sullivan's controversial AO37 proposal and the administration's approach to public safety. Based on testimony, Willikowski thinks the issue is fundamentally one of resources. He's considering allocations in the budget that could help the Anchorage Police Department, although concedes that new expenditures are not an easy sell in the current fiscal environment. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The University of Alaska Southeast has programs in business, arts and sciences, education, and career education. UAS is a learning community where your professors are mentors and friends on campus and online. UAS.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Southeast. If you're ready to quit tobacco, Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online. Now introducing Text to Quit, a way to help you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT now or visit AlaskaQuitLine.com for more information. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
Southeast Alaska's commercial salmon trawlers are heading back into port now that the winter season has closed, thanks to strong catches of king salmon on the outer coast near Sitka. The season closed at midnight on Wednesday, March 25th. That's the earliest closure on record by more than 2 weeks.
And the previous record for closing early was set 10 years ago, April 9th, 2005.
That's Patty Scanness, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's Troll Management Biologist for Southeast. The fishery opened in October. It remains open until the fleet catches 43 to 47,000 non-Alaska hatchery king salmon, or until the end of April, whichever comes first. It's the seventh time since 2003 that the season has closed early. Spring troll fisheries targeting kings returning to Southeast Alaska's hatcheries will be opening in mid-April, May, and June. Meetings for those fisheries are planned around the region in April. Northern Indigenous people have adapted to Western-style government while retaining a traditional cooperative approach to leadership. That's the finding of Quebec-based political anthropologist Caroline Hervé. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Caroline Hervé has visited Indigenous communities in Quebec as part of a PhD project to gain an understanding of leadership in evolving Inuit culture.
It's a very difficult topic and challenging topic because the word leadership or the word power or politics doesn't exist in Inuit language.
Hervé says she's had to look at leadership as a concept in historic and contemporary times.
Understand well how people were organized from a political point of view before they were settled in communities and how they appropriated the new concepts of power.
Hervé says prior to settlement, there was no formal government in Inuit culture with elders heavily relied on for decisions.
And what was very important was the cooperative practices.
Hervé says that remains true today and is a challenge as Western leadership is imposed on the Inuit. She says people take on roles like mayor or council member without fully yielding to a top-down leadership model.
They're trying to take the best part of each world.
Hervé says the Inuit are also balancing their traditional cooperative approach with the Western-style money-based economy. Hervé is working in Alaska to compare Inuit leadership in Quebec with that of Inupiaq in Alaska. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
The Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly approved a measure that allows the area school district to keep $800,000 rather than give it back to the borough. As KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, Assembly members say the action was a small step toward helping the district cope with cuts that district officials have proposed to deal with an $11 million state funding shortfall.
Assemblywoman Diane Hutchison sponsored the measure, along with Presiding Officer Carl Castle, to waive a provision in the borough code that requires the district to give back $800,000 at the end of each school year to go into a fund that helps pay for school maintenance. Hutchison says it was a small but earnest gesture to help the district at a time when it's struggling to deal with state funding cuts due to both plummeting oil revenues and falling enrollment.
We felt this was certainly a time when the school district could use this extra $800,000.
The Assembly clearly didn't need any encouragement before approving the measure, with all eight members voting in favor. Assemblyman Lance Roberts was not present. But some members of the public, along with a few district employees, like North Pole Middle School teacher Vanessa Jackson, took the opportunity anyway to again testify about the urgent need to help the district at a time of severe fiscal contraction.
There's nothing really left to cut at the school district without impacting the students in some negative way or the other.
Laura Vollmert, who has two middle schoolers in the district, says although it's a relatively small amount, the $800,000 would encourage district workers and parents before the assembly begins work on the recommended budget that the district school board approved Wednesday.
I feel like the borough assembly has an opportunity right now to really show its support for education. I feel like this is the first opportunity that you have to show your support. There will be other opportunities down the line.
The Assembly won't finish work on the district's recommended $274.9 million spending plan until mid-May, after the legislature passes a state budget and the governor completes his review. Also Thursday, the Assembly approved a measure that ratifies a new contract for about 50 unionized borough managers and supervisors. The three-year contract with members of the Alaska State Employees Association and American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees sets an annual cost of living increase starting next year that'll range from 1 to 2% and annual merit increases of 1.9% through 2018. The borough estimates those provisions will cost between $23,900 and $140,300 next year. The borough estimates the contract's health plan provisions will cost between $309,500 and $1.2 million in 2016. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, Emily Files in Haines, Quentin Chandler in Homer, Joe Vicknicki in Petersburg, and Dan Bross and Tim Ellis in Fairbanks. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reported from Juneau and Liz Ruskin from Washington, D.C. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly. ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
And by
Crowley, providing marine petroleum distribution and energy support services throughout Alaska since 1953, supporting business development while helping safeguard the environment. More at CrowleyAlaska.com. The 2015 PFD filing season is here. If you have questions about your absences or someone you know away at college or serving in the military, the State of Alaska Department of Revenue encourages you to be proactive. Check out the absence guidelines before applying for your PFD. Visit pfd.alaska.gov and click on eligibility in the banner to learn more. The deadline to apply is March 31st. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.